Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, Mike, this is just a fascinating study, and I guess for a lot of people, very concerning, particularly for people who play gladiatorial sports, and I'd imagine even more concerning for those that govern those particular sports. Of the 202 deceased former football players that you studied, and I must outline here, it was a combination of high school, college, and professional players. How did you recruit those brains?
Yeah, sure. So the brains were recruited through a couple of different ways. One is through the family members kind of signed up before the individual passed away and agreed to brain donation, or the individual agreed to brain donation. And also through some of our outreach efforts here, through such as the Concussion Legacy Foundation, also helped to reach out to family members or individuals to kind of recruit brain donors.
Of the brains donated to the study, the family members who signed off on this, how many of them already felt that there was a link back to their days of playing football because in later life their family member had suffered dementia or had shown signs now linked back to CTE?
Yeah, so I mean, we don't know the exact number of who suspected they had it. But that's one of the limitations of our study that you're pointing out, is that a lot of the individuals who agreed to donate their brain are experiencing some sort of symptoms, and that's why they're more likely to donate. And that's a certain bias it introduces to the study.
As mentioned, of the 202 brains that were examined, were there any that were randomly selected?
Randomly selected? No. So the brains were donated, again, like based on those willing to donate. So whoever the inclusion criteria was that they had to have some sort of history of exposure to repetitive head impact. So as long as they met that inclusion criteria, they were eligible to come into the study.
Of the 202 brains that you studied, 111 came from former NFL players. Within that 111, 110 were identified as having CTE. Did that surprise you?
You know, that I've been doing this for a couple of years now, and even if you go back to our earlier study in 2013, we were seeing CTE often in the people who play professionally. So while that number is incredibly concerning and shocking, to me, that what was most surprising is the number of cases of CTE in the amateur football players, the high school and college.
How much information was requested from the families in terms of the number of concussions or head trauma that might have been suffered while they were playing NFL or possibly in the workplace later in life?
So what we do for all these cases is we talk to the family members or friends or other informants, and that's how we collect the clinical information from all the individuals who donated their brains. And so we have to go by that kind of secondhand source of information. And we do ask them about, you know, history of concussions, and we also ask about other symptoms they experienced during life.
When we look at brain injuries and we look at CTE amongst American football players, we automatically link it back to concussion when a player or an individual loses sort of cognitive function. But how much of the study can we link back to subconcussive impacts, i.e., let's use soccer as an example of somebody who has spent a lifetime hitting a football?
Yeah, so actually it's the subconcussive head impacts that we think is a prominent contributor to CTE. It's these impacts to the head that aren't resulting in immediate clinical symptoms, such as what we see in concussion. It's kind of these silent hits, these thousands and thousands of silent hits that we think are adding up and overall kind of driving the development of CTE.
Here in New Zealand, whether it be rugby or rugby league, when a player is deemed to have taken a serious knock to the head and possibly has symptoms of concussion, they leave the field, they have to go through a cognitive test. If they pass that cognitive test, often they are sent back out on the field. Do you believe that goes far enough in terms of looking after the athlete and ensuring that best practice is put in place?
You know, I think there's been a lot of progress made in the field of concussion, and I'm talking about concussion here, not the subconcussive head impacts. I think there's been great progress in terms of detecting concussion, as well as managing the safety of individuals who've had a concussion. But really, what we're talking about here in terms of CTE are these subconcussive and repetitive head impacts. And how we're going to manage those is I think, a more of a challenging task and something that we need to start looking into a little bit more closely.
Can I draw a conclusion from your study that possibly playing sports that have a high level of subconcussive impact and sports that have a high level of concussion are basically just dangerous long-term for your health?
You know, it's a good question. I think our study raises a lot of concern for that, but we have to keep in mind that playing sports is also associated with a lot of benefits. There's a lot of values and life lessons to be learned from playing sports. But our study has a lot of concern about the possible long-term implications of exposing yourself to hitting your head over and over.
What are some other everyday things in life that could possibly lead to CTE outside of sport?
That's a good question. We don't know. So right now what we know is that our research has shown that all the cases so far who've had chronic traumatic encephalopathy, they've all had a history of repetitive head impacts, hitting their head over and over again. That said, not all individuals who've had this history has gone on to develop CTE. So like you're getting at, there are likely some other kind of risk factors that might interact with hitting your head to increase your risk for CTE. And we don't really know what those are yet, and we have to kind of figure that out. Yeah, so I think there are evidence guidelines out there on how to manage a concussion. So we know with concussion, particularly acute concussion, most people recover after a couple of weeks or so. And it's important, though, however, proper management of concussion is done. Specifically, you know, an individual should not return to play before until their symptoms completely resolve. I mean, I think that's one of the biggest parts of managing concussion. So I think properly following the guidelines that exist, the consensus criteria, are important in managing concussion and outcomes.
My guest is Dr. Mike Olosko from Boston University, who was a co-author into a recent study on the brains of American football players and the potential impact that their playing careers have had on them later in life due to concussion or subconcussive impacts. Mike, what would be the ideal study going forward to draw more conclusive evidence that there is genuinely a link and that people that are playing gladiatorial sports or sports that involve regular impact to the head have a greater chance of suffering from CTE later in life?
Yeah, so, you know, we know based on this study that CTE, we're finding it a lot in football players, but we can only diagnose it at death right now using neuropathological criteria. We really need to be able to diagnose this disease in life. Once we can do that, we can kind of start determining how common CTE is in the general population. We can start to study risk factors, and we can more importantly start to study ways to prevent and treat CTE. So I really think that's the next step that we need to focus on.
How seriously is the NFL starting to take this issue? Are they genuine? Are they sincere in terms of trying to reduce risk and provide greater education? Or is it just the politically correct thing to do and they're playing a little bit more lip service and then backing it up with a big check?
Right. So I think everyone's kind of growing more and more aware of this issue. And I think everyone's starting to take it serious. I think it's, especially following this study, it's really kind of front and center and in our face, and we really need to kind of pay attention to it and address it. And I think this study is going to serve as a really rich foundation going forward for addressing it and building more resources to conduct research.
Reading information about the research that you have done, is it fair to say that part of future studies need to involve people who have suffered from dementia or mental health issues later in life that haven't necessarily come from a sporting background? Maybe people that have grown up and dedicated their lives to, say, chess, for an example.
Right. So we need to, so we need to study all sorts of people. We need to study not just football players, but we need to study other athletes who've had a history of exposing themselves to repetitive head impacts, or even other, you know, civilians who've had maybe numerous hits to the head due to falls. We just need to see really how CTE presents and who it affects, and get a better understanding overall on it.
What are the lessons that come out of this research for all stakeholders in sports that have a high risk when it comes to concussion, or by nature involve a lot of sub-concussive impact?
Yeah, so I think there's a few lessons coming from this study. One, it's raising a lot of awareness to the issue. I think it's a problem that needs to be addressed and can't be ignored anymore. And the other issue is that we found it in 177 of 202 football players, and it really provides some compelling evidence for a link between football and CTE. We really need to kind of do some more research, though, and learn more about the risk factors, why some develop it and why others don't, in order to get more informed in terms of providing recommendations for policy and safety. But I think the level of awareness it's raising will hopefully bring out some more considerations for safety of the athletes.
Well, Dr. Michael Osko, we thank you for joining us this afternoon here on the program. We look forward to following your future research, and thank you for bringing attention and greater awareness to what is becoming a very serious issue.
Oh, it was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.